Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
All right, get ready.
Here's John Williams.
You're going to get goosebumps. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, John, we always do that when we hear your show. But no, wait, there's more. This is John. We're here in the Allstate Skyline Studio until 3 Saturdays, 10 a.m. until 12 noon on social media. Look for me as WGN King John. Want to be king someday, and I want to do it for you. All right, Kim, are you still over there? Because they do a little switcheroo in
the
seat.
I'm here.
Just tell me what you think of this song. Elif, let's go ahead and play that song that I posted on my Facebook page. How did I see this? Oh, yeah. Yeah, my wife Brenda said to me this morning, she goes, listen to this. There's some trombones. And I went, oh, okay, trombones are always funny. But here's the song. Thinking, wow, John.
I'm thinking it sounds like a middle school band playing Queen.
That's not what they're thinking out there. Twenty-eight trombones from around the world. And it goes on like that for a while. And when you see the video, it's kind of neat. Men and women, old and young, tall and short, around the globe, all of them laying down tracks, and then somebody mixes it together and they make this Bohemian.
That's very cool.
Well, thank you
for
that.
Was it in honor of the movie? Or?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. They probably had it in mind anyway, and this sort of thing has been done before, but the timing sure is good. In fact, but the song goes on for like 20 minutes, right? So track two on that, Elif, I don't know if you've noticed, but I think I put in part two and part three. See if you see that in there yet. Okay, so let's just skip forward ahead a little bit. This would be part two, Elif, Bohemian Rhapsody, go. How much fun was that?
That's great.
How much fun was that? And then, of course, you know, towards the end of the song, this will be part three, they just, you know, they totally crank on the thing. Okay, now that's fun,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
it? Now Very. We're having fun.
Okay, it started out a little slow, but I'm in it now.
Take back the grade school band
thing you
said.
I'm in it to win it now.
It immediately makes me want to start singing the song.
Yeah. It does.
I've heard it way too many times in my life.
I've listened to it about four times today. And I think on about the second or third, producer Elif just broke into song. And
Got a mooch.
I was shocked at what a good singer she is.
Oh, God, come on.
I didn't know Elif could sing at all. She was cranking on it.
All right, hum a few bars. Come on, Elif.
Okay, now I'm embarrassed.
Well, then don't. You know, Lou Manfredini and his producer.
Okay, anywhere. No, I'm kidding.
Lou and Lindsay are really good singers. I'm not, but now we have another good. Hey, Violetta, are you a really good singer over there?
Oh, I'm really great.
She can barely speak right now.
I'm not going to laugh. I'm not going to make fun of, and nor am I going to push you today. V, I'm sorry that your voice left you.
I know. I'm sorry, too.
It's so not you, because you're so energetic and positive and fun and friendly, and then there's that. And
well, if I like try to project too much, it sounds worse, so I need to tone it down a little.
Can I tell you guys, I was on the Red Line today, and we had the snow coming down, and it was kind of a nice scene, but there really was a wintry chill in the air today, and the snow. And I'm on the Red Line, and you know how that is at rush hour. It's shoulder to shoulder. And this is the first time I've noticed this season. But I started to count the seconds in between somebody doing this. And the longest I got was four counts. Everybody on the thing was just doing a... Everybody's got their head down, looking at their iPhones, and everybody's going the whole way.
Do you think you need to be listening to Bohemian Rhapsody instead?
You think that'll help take away the sniffy sound?
Earphones, yeah.
Well, I was just thinking, boy, oh boy, here we go. It is cold. It is Sharon, the cold season. You know, we had that conversation a week ago or so about should you wear those silly surgical masks and do they do any good?
Do you have one?
I thought, oh my God, if I had one, I think I'd put it on right now.
Or I'll put it on.
You know, and I don't know if it's to keep me from getting theirs or to keep them from getting mine. Not that I'm suffering right now, but I mean, that's why you wear those things. And the good doctor we had on, I'm trying to remember what his thought on that was. He didn't think it was a bad idea, but he said that as problematic as anything, when you're in a shared space and you don't want to spread your cold or catch a cold, is the touched surfaces. What happens is your will fall on, say, the handrail. Then somebody else's hand touches that, and then you touch your face. So don't touch your face. Wash your hands. That's the main thing.
Violetta, what are you going to do with that windscreen when you're done for the day?
Oh, yeah. You're talking into a windscreen in front of your microphone.
I'm going to let Mary use it tomorrow morning.
I know. I had a buddy, and I'll tell you what. I worked for a program director one time at a radio. So you think about this. We're all talking into soft styrofoam socks around all of our microphones, and we all have headphones. And most of us share the microphones and the headphones. And in the wintertime, Rob would come around, and he would spray Lysol over everything and disinfect everything. Just because, good grief, if you said, how could we share the germs, that would be the way to do it.
Yeah, they're like right there. The thing is, I didn't really talk to anybody today until I got to work, so I just didn't.
You're kind of sitting there silently, and then when you opened up your mouth, you went, oh, no.
Man, wow. You sound terrible.
I know. I'm sorry.
But wait a minute. You like singing in the car, so I'm finding this a little hard to wrap my head around.
You know, it was a tranquil ride in today. No music.
Okay.
Hey, Steve, did you hear, now that you switched positions with Kim over there, did you hear the Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah, I thought in the Mincing Rascals you said they were tubas.
Did I say tubas?
No, you probably said trombones. I must have.
I heard trombones.
Okay, I was thinking tubas. No, that sounded great.
Go to part three on that again. This is...
let's play some more.
A little bit. Oh, yes, we absolutely are. It's a lot of fun, and we're having fun now.
The trombone can do anything.
Well, don't you think that tune can also do anything?
You mean played different ways by different people is going to be fun every time?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you really like the song, so you're going to like it coming out of the tuba or
it
trombone.
It does help, and it's just such a great and varied song. So in the beginning, it's slow, and then it hits that funny part in the middle, and then it cranks at the end. Who doesn't love themselves some Bohemian Rhapsody? Haven't seen the movie. My producer Griffin says that he's not so sure about this. He doesn't think he's going to like this movie.
I don't want to hear it, Griffin.
I'm pretty excited about seeing the movie.
Me too.
Can I give you one other quick movie that I saw recently that I think you might enjoy? Leave No Trace. Has anybody heard of or seen Leave No Trace?
I think I might have seen it. What?
It's based on a true story about a father and a daughter in Portland who were living in the woods.
Right. And then the authorities catch up to them and all that. Yeah,
right.
I did see that movie.
It's really good. The girl that plays the daughter is fantastic. The guy that plays the father is really good. He has PTSD or something like that. He was in the military. He is not well when he comes out. He's not bad to his daughter, but he just can't live in society. And he's going to live in the woods on his own. Well, with his daughter, the two of them. And they lived that way for 4 years, undetected. They grew their own food. Every now and then, they'd scrape together some money and go into town, put on their coat and walk into town, buy some supplies, some rice that they could store and cook, etc. But they lived in the woods for 4 years. A couple folks come by jogging one day, and they see the girl, and they say, "Hey, what are you doing here?" And she goes, "Oh, crap, we're caught." And they had a plan that if they were ever going to be caught, they would escape, if you will. But they weren't able to. They were captured. And this is the really sweet part about the movie. So now they're in the system, right? She's being held by DCFS. They're asking, "Was your father abusive to you?" They don't know what's going on in the woods. And you think this is just going to be this sort of cold, bureaucratic nightmare, because the father and son loved each other, were kind to each other. It was a dysfunctional relationship, and the girl didn't need or deserve that. But she loved her dad, and they were getting along. He was even teaching her. Her academic skills were on grade, even a little high. They had an encyclopedia. And you thought when they get brought into the bureaucratic system, it's just going to break your heart and theirs. And yet the people who were tending to their needs were so sympathetic and so intelligent and so got it and tried to find a place that would be part of civilization but still remote for them. And, you know, what happens next? Go see the movie. But leave no trace. Because when they were living in the woods, they knew that the only way they would be able to, you know, not be detected was if they left no trace. Leave No Trace is the movie. And I was, you know, you're just like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? Is this for real? It came out about a year ago or so, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. Ben Foster was the dad. People know Ben Foster, I think.
And, you know, there's not a lot of dialogue in this movie in parts because it's just the two of them in the woods. But there is some dialogue. And if you want to just get away from it all, literally and figuratively, that movie sure does it. Okay, we'll pause here and come back. A couple of things to pick up on. A reporter in Wisconsin. I'm just going to go back to the Baraboo Boys story for a second, because after yesterday's show, I went back and looked at the picture, and I had a little bit of a change of heart. There's also a long story in the Wisconsin Journal Sentinel, I believe it's called, out of Madison, the state's big newspaper. And the reporter that wrote that up there is going to join us and answer a few questions that we all still have about the Baraboo Boys giving the Nazi salute. We'll get to that in about 10 minutes. This is WGN. We do a daily web poll question. We call it the News Click. I post that on my Facebook page. And by that, I mean, Elif, post that on our Facebook page. Here's today's News Click question.
Was it wrong for Melania Trump to express her opinion on the Deputy National Security Advisor?
Oh, that's the new one.
Yes or no.
I figured those would be the options. Was it wrong for her to express her opinion about that? The Mincing Rascals took that up on our daily and our weekly podcast that we recorded today. Now, that'll go up probably around 5 o'clock this afternoon. That's when it usually...
Whenever Ella gets around to it.
She's got a lot to do.
I just have so much to do, you know.
You do. And so we usually get it up around 5. But the question today is, was it wrong for Melania to express her opinion? And Steve Bertrand and Scott Stantis were saying things like, you know, this is not unprecedented. Everybody says this is unprecedented. It's not unprecedented.
Well, no, wait a minute. I said it's not unprecedented that first ladies get involved in personnel.
There you are.
It's absolutely unprecedented that they've put out a statement.
Well, maybe I misrepresented you.
Yeah, then. Calling for the firing of someone not in their department. That's not, I don't know if that's ever happened before.
Yeah, and the other question is this all right, so whatever, right? I mean, there's one of two ways to look at this. Either that woman was good at her job, and it sure sounds pretty important, Deputy National Security Advisor, right? That's not talk show host. That's a thing. And she had that job. So, doggone it, that person's got work to do. And if somebody was upset, well, who got to sit next to who on an airplane, I don't think she should lose her job because of that, right? But it sounds like she wasn't really a good team player anyway. She was awful to people, just if you believe the reports, and they aren't just coming from the First Lady's office. She wasn't cooperative. She clashed with other senior members of the administration, so maybe it was time for her to go.
Yeah, well, the weird part of the story isn't any of that. It's that the first lady put out a statement saying that she should go. That's just very unusual.
I like the way she put it out, too. It is the position of the office of the first lady that she no longer deserves the honor of serving in this White House. She being that Mira Ricardo. It is the position of the office of the first lady that your head should be chopped off. I mean, really, it's just like, wow.
It's pretty weird.
It's just an odd wording. It sounds very full of itself, and you're first lady. You know, you get to say stuff. But I mean, who with all due respect, who asked the first lady, right? It's not your place to weigh in on that publicly.
This would be like, in a way, the attorney general putting out a statement saying, I think the secretary of state should be fired. You know, it's someone inside the government.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and it's one thing to go to the president privately or chief of staff and say, hey, we need changes here. This isn't working because of this. But to put out, it just is not something that usually happens.
If I had 20 seconds to be a fly on a wall somewhere, I'm telling you, I want to be in the Pence's kitchen in the morning when they're chatting. Going to kiss his butt much, Martin, honey, you know, something like that. Or just catch a few minutes of Donald and Melania and see what their real life and relationship is like. Like, did she come in and say, stamp her foot and say, Donald, that's it. She's got to go. She was terrible to my people, and I can't take it anymore.
The original version of that statement said, Donald, are you listening?
But he was, evidently. And, you know, and really, because then she says that, and he goes, oh, yeah, I feel terrible about that, honey. Ah, geez, what are we going to do? You know, I can't fire her for that. I mean, you know, I can fire her for these other things, but we can't fire her for that. And a week goes by and nothing's been done. And then Sarah Sanders taps Donald Trump on the shoulder and she goes, have you seen this?
She was with the president at the White House in an appearance yesterday afternoon about the time the statement was being released.
It is the position of the office of the, oh no, she did what? So then he goes up to Melania and he says, hun, I thought we talked about this. She goes, yeah, we did. You didn't do anything about it. I issued a statement. What are you going to do now, big boy? I mean, does it go like that? I don't know. I want to know. Incidentally, CBS reported this morning that Melania Trump and this woman, Mira Ricardo, have never met. They have never met. That she was unkind to her staff and that she's awful in the office evidently is upsetting to the first lady, but evidently they have never had a face-to-face conversation, said CBS TV this morning. It's 1:29. We'll pause here, update you on the news. Then we go back to Wisconsin for some unanswered questions. Our news click is asking if Melania Trump was out of line. I mean, that's not protocol. You shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be saying what you think about the National Security Advisor and that she should be fired. But she did, and we're asking you what you think about that. Your texts include these, 219, if Hillary Clinton or Michelle Obama did that, you would be on board. Well, we'll never know. 708 said this, he would be called, we wondered what you would call the husband if the president were a female. And 708 reminds us that that would be first gentleman. Not first lady, as is Melania, but first gentleman were, say, Hillary Clinton to be elected. Bill Clinton would have been first. Or you could have called him Mr. President, too, because he obtains that title.
So F. GOTUS.
First gentleman of the United States, the F. GOTUS, or the first MOTUS, the F. MOTUS, the first man of the United States. FHOTUS, first husband of the United States. None of those sound nice. Okay, thanks for your text on that. Remember, you can call or text at any time, 312-981-7200. That is our phone number. After yesterday's show, when we spoke at some length with you about the Baraboo, Wisconsin high school boys who were pictured last spring on prom night on some courthouse steps. And it sounded like this was a tradition. The boys go get their picture taken there. And one of the dads took the picture of the boys, and he, according to one of the students today, said, give me a high five, wave to your parents. So the boys all raised their hand, and he took the picture. Now, was that the boys waving to their parents, giving them a high five? Or was that the boys giving a Nazi salute? It sure looks like a Nazi salute. This happened some time ago, but the internet finally found it, caught up with it, it's gone viral. And now literally newspapers around the world are talking about what's happening in Baraboo. They had a school board meeting this week to talk about it. And throughout that town, even at a town rally on Tuesday, the people have gathered to say, this is not us. In fact, one of the moms said, I hope that the picture of us at this rally promoting love gets the same amount of attention as the picture of the boys. Well, that's not going to happen. I mean, you can find the picture if you want, but that's not going viral. In the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, reporter Anissa Johnson wrote a long story about this. She's the K-12 reporter, so she covers the education beat for the newspaper to the north. And she joins us now on WGN Radio. Hi, Anissa. It's John. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Likewise. I'm glad you were able to join us. I guess the $64 question remains, what was the intent of the boys or the photographer? Do we have an answer to that yet?
Well, the photographer has said that his intention was to get them to wave to their parents. We heard that about 24 hours after this all started erupting online. We've had a few statements that have appeared on television news or online from the boys in which we're getting sort of mixed messages about what was happening. I don't think anyone has come out and said we intended to do a Nazi salute, but that has certainly been the impression.
Did you ask
that
the school?
People have been left with.
Did you ask school administrators? I mean, they've surely talked to some of these kids. What's their view of this?
Well, we've repeatedly tried to reach them. I think they're in crisis mode. I think they have not communicated with us other than some canned statements. We got a statement yesterday. That was the most recent statement we received was an apology. It was a public apology by the superintendent, and she essentially said, regardless of the details of the photo or the intentions and the hearts of those involved, the truth is that this is an image that has, as she said, rightly been described as hateful, frightening, and disappointing. I did ask her to clarify that. I don't like to have to read between the lines. I interpreted the rightly has been described as her saying that she believes that this looks like a Nazi salute, but again, without that clarification from her, I can't be 100% sure.
She didn't respond to your query about that, so while she said it's rightly being interpreted as hateful, you don't want to read between the lines, and I think that's wise of you. There's this young man, Jordan Blue, who said that we knew what was going on. Everybody was being funny by giving the Nazi salute, but he wouldn't do it. But again, one of the other boys, a couple of them have since said, he said, give us a high five, and we all gave him a high five, and that's all it was. You know, what's also interesting to me is the lag time here. I just can't imagine what it's like for anybody associated with this, say the parents or the kids themselves, to several months later, all of a sudden they go, hey, remember that picture we took? Guess what? We are in national conversation right now. That must be so, I don't know, upsetting to these parents, either because their kids were so hateful or upsetting to the parents because their kids aren't bad kids. This is being taken way out of context. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, there has been some discussion about how, so this is a group photo that was taken on the steps of the courthouse. It's before prom. And we have been told that parents were behind the photographer. Parents were there and could see it. I did see one news account where a parent apparently yelled at the kids after they did it. Then this photograph was up online or on his website, the photographer's website, for a while. And so there's been some discussion about, so why do we, you know, how could this be up there for months and nobody care, nobody suggest it be taken down, nobody raise a question about it? And only when it was actually, my understanding of how this even broke, it was a blogger out of New York who posted on Twitter and said, you know, can somebody explain to me how it is that this entire class of kids looks like they're throwing up the Nazi salute. And it just exploded after that. So, and then it came down.
And what just adds a little more context to it, maybe, is that so you've got these kids, and maybe coincidentally they all had their arms locked as they were giving a high five to their mom and dad, and it wasn't a Nazi salute. That's hard to believe, right? But, I mean, that's what they're telling us happened. Okay, maybe so. But what's really hard to understand then is why the other kid, front and center in that photograph, has the white nationalist okay symbol in his hand. It's a weird way to pose your fingers. You when you see the photo, that's not the way somebody normally rests their hands or poses in a photograph. But he's throwing next to one kid doing the Nazi salute, the white nationalist symbol. Now, wow, what a coincidence, guys, because that really looks bad, doesn't it?
Well, I hope you have someone monitoring your email, because you will now be inundated with folks who will lecture you about how that has nothing to do with white nationalist movements, and how this is just a troll. So what I had to do is go and educate myself about how that symbol has been sort of co-opted, and I would suggest going. You can look up the Southern Poverty Law Center and also the ADL. Both of those have really good explainers about that symbol and how it's used, and how it can mean other things, but it also has been co-opted by white nationalists. The question that people raise is, why then isn't that wildly coincidental that that it's happening at the very same time his friends appear to be throwing up a Nazi salute?
Anissa Johnson writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She covers the education beat. One other thing about this, Anissa, I'll let you go, but is there any other history at this school with these individuals or with the photographer? Because here's the kind of guy I am, Anissa. When we asked our listeners yesterday, I want to believe that the kids thought it was funny, but they really didn't appreciate the gravity of it. Is there any history of, again, with any of the people I just mentioned, with them flirting with this subject in any other way?
Well, I want to go back to something you said about the gravity of it, and I think when you look at that picture, there might be some kids in there who don't know what's going on, or they're sort of trying to figure it out, and maybe it's been suggested that some of these are group behavior where they just follow along, but they don't really understand the significance. You know, until we talk to those kids, we don't really know what each person's intention was. And this is not unique to Baraboo, but, you know, there are racial tensions in probably every community in America, and Baraboo isn't the only one. I've been talking to a parent whose child has struggled there. There was a story from 2012 where the principal had to address the proliferation of Confederate flags in the school parking lot, and there were complaints to the school about how that was intimidating some minority students. Again, it's not unique to Baraboo, but I do think they have struggled with some issues.
Yeah. 708, people nowadays are jumping to conclusions and trying to make something out of nothing. Well, I sounded like that yesterday. Then I went back and looked at the pictures some more, and I found myself getting angrier and sort of hardening my view on this. But again, maybe that none of this, I guess, ultimately is fair until we hear more from the kids. There's no other video or photograph. I mean, if that's the case, then this will be the first time in the history of the world that many people with cell phones didn't capture additional photos or video, because that would be very helpful here. You have not seen anything else that corroborates.
I have not. You know, I think the smoking gun would be if a parent or somebody else in that group videotaped it that day, but we've not heard from anybody. We've not seen any kind of suggestion that that exists.
773 said, take a good look, John. Only two of the boys were giving a decent salute. Most were just waving. Boy, I'm looking at that picture now, and everybody sees it differently. I see the Nazi salute is what I see. All right. Anissa, very interesting. Read the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and her coverage of this and other stories. Anissa Johnson, thank you for your time this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so tell me what this is and you'll win a prize. Hit it. Do you know what that is? Here's the sound. If you call 312-981-7200, first person to correctly tell me what this is wins a prize. Kevin, you can't play. Just in case you're listening over there in sports land, you're not invited.
Sounds dangerous.
You want to hear one more time? If you're interested in refinancing your existing home or investment property, you need to call Team Hochberg. George from Bucktown was so happy with his refi, he wrote a review. I love it when people do this. Here's a quote to David Hochberg and his gang. I am very pleased with the way my Team Hochberg loan officer, Anna Eckroth, and Team Hochberg helped me and my family secure a new mortgage within 2 weeks of signing the application. Everything was done in an efficient and professional manner. I was thrilled Team Hochberg secured me an appraisal waiver. That saved me a lot of time and money. I was able to secure a lower rate and save a couple $100s a month. I'll definitely refer everybody I know to Anna and Team Hochberg. Close quotes. Hey, if you're refinancing and would like a loan process that way, I want you to call Team Hochberg's mortgage experts now. 312-751-1333. 312-751-1333 for a free consultation. Team Hochberg's helped thousands of our listeners. They can't help you if you don't call. So call 312-751-1333 or visit WGNDavid.com. Pearl Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee. Their MLS ID number is 19186. Do we have a winner? David, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm just fine, my friend.
What is this sound? What is it?
Sounds like a football being ricocheted off of an upright at Soldier Field.
Affirmative.
Affirmative.
And how many times did we hear that?
Oh, boy, three?
Yeah, no.
Even more.
Higher, higher.
Okay, yep, at least three.
Yeah, four. Four times Cody Parker hit the thing. Parky. So was supposed to practice last night, you know, in the inclement conditions, and Roe and them were saying, you know, what we need to do is not just have him practice outside, outdoors, whatever, but let's get a stadium full of people to help him out by screaming and trying to distract him, you know, try and simulate a real game experience.
They had helicopter shots up watching him from above.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Because they said they might, I didn't actually see it. And did he make them? I hope that when they were watching, the ball was going through the upright.
I just wish he would have waved.
I'll bet if you gave even the best field goal kickers in the world a lot of chances to hit four times out of six the goalpost, they wouldn't do it. They'd come close, but that's just hard to do.
I would say out of 100.
Yeah, maybe four times out of 100.
Well, then he's very talented.
Yeah, at that. Listen, I've got a certificate for a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas Creations on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. They've got a ginormous selection of artificial trees and decorations over there. Go get yourself a bear's tree or something, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, hold on. Talk to producer Elif off the air. We'll set you up. It's 1:57. The news is next. That means the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
It's a living.
Here's John Williams.
What we do. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here till 3, Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 12 noon.
Lord have mercy.
Saturday show's been getting bumped these days with Northwestern football and special events, but I believe we're in the house on Saturday. We'll do a Saturday 10 to noon show for you. Looking forward to that. Remember on social media, I'm WGN King John, and remember that we post a daily web poll question. We call it the News Click. So the last one you voted on was, producer Elif, you've got that, don't you?
Newly elected state comptroller Susana Mendoza is now running for mayor. A, fair enough, it's up to her, 39%. B, wait a minute, I don't like this switcheroo, 61%.
40% one way, Sissa. About 6 out of 10 say, wait a minute, I don't like the switcheroo. Was that question loaded? Was that begging for a certain answer? Wait a minute, I don't like this switcheroo. Was that too written in a way that kind of lent you to go there? The Mincing Rascals talked a little bit about that. Here's what I want to know. What's a comptroller do? She's the state comptroller.
She writes the checks.
Oh, is that what the comptroller does?
Right.
I didn't want to ask you publicly because I didn't know that you know. Good for you, Steve. Ed Henry is the chief national correspondent for Fox News. Now, you may have heard about this Acosta-CNN conversation between them and the White House. It's actually a lawsuit now. And there's an amicus brief which has been filed by 13 news organizations, and among them is Fox News, and they're on CNN's side on this one. A spokesperson for Fox said, "We hate to see the press credentials become weaponized." That was their word. Ed Henry joins us on WGN to talk a little bit about that. Ed, thanks for joining us on WGN.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So just talk a little bit about this. What's your reaction to the story generally, first of all, about what happened that day?
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, look, I think Fox News and our president, Jay Wallace, president of news, has made clear that we are in no way endorsing what Jim Acosta did at that last news conference. We were just standing up for a free press. A free and fair press, CNN and other news organizations, for example, stood up for Fox News. A lot of people might not remember this, but early in the Obama administration, President Barack Obama and his Treasury Department tried arbitrarily to exclude Fox from sort of a round robin of interviews. I think it was with the Treasury Secretary, as I mentioned, way back when in 2009 or so, and tried to say, well, we're just going to talk to CNN, CBS, ABC. We're going to leave Fox out of it because basically they didn't like Fox. And to their credit, CNN and others stood up and said, look, we're not endorsing Fox. We're not endorsing what their reporters report or what their opinion guys like Sean Hannity say. But there should be a free, honest, open, fair press. And so we're going to stand up for that principle. I think that's what Fox News is doing now. We're not endorsing CNN, clearly. We're not endorsing Jim Acosta. And what I think personally, as a former chief White House correspondent for both Fox, and I was the senior White House correspondent at CNN, by the way, before I was at Fox, having been at both organizations, I could tell you, I think that a lot of my colleagues have been surprised that Jim has been very opinionated as a White House correspondent. I think that, you know, obviously you're supposed to be objective and down the middle. And I think he was arguing with the president, frankly, at that news conference. And, you know, I used to have some back and forth there with President Obama and President Bush before him. And it wasn't always pleasant or polite on either side, perhaps, and sometimes it gets a little heated. But I think particularly when you talk about the caravan question that was asked, you heard the reporter, you know, not just challenging the president, but saying, no, you're wrong. You know, actually, it's not an invasion, and giving an opinion. And I think that is unfortunate, and that's not what correspondents usually do.
And Acosta,
go ahead.
And Acosta prefaced his question about whatever he's going to ask about. I'm trying to remember exactly what the point of his question was. But
about the caravan and whether it really was an invasion and whatnot, about the midterms, yeah.
But I actually think he was getting to something else, but that he prefaced his question with that remark, which I don't think was helpful. I think the president has a right to call it anything he wants. Clearly, they have a differing opinion about that. And I think you're right that Acosta has sort of let it get to be too personal to him. Now, granted, the president's given him plenty of reason to feel that way, but that's the job of the press, is to try and have thick skin and be neutral about it.
I agree with that. And by the way, I don't think it's just Jim Acosta. I think there's a lot of people at CNN and other organizations who have taken it personally. I mean, just watch their programs, and it becomes, you know, me against the president. And it's not just once in a while, like a one-off, like, oh, I had a bad day and I got mad at the president. It's night in, night out. Let's take out the president. And I think on the opinion side, you've seen that where there are opinion shows on certain channels, quote-unquote opinion, that try to be or claim to be quote-unquote news shows. And they're not. They're opinion shows. And so that's a whole other issue, but it's related.
That becomes very confusing for a lot of people, by the way. Help me with this. I mean, when we reached out to Fox, my producer found you, and I so appreciate your coming on. You're the chief White House correspondent for Fox News.
I'm the chief national correspondent now, just to be clear. Yes.
Fair enough. Thank you for that. So you're the chief national correspondent for Fox News. Is that a different animal, Fox News, than whoever it is that governs Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity, those people?
In a way. I mean, look, I'm not running from what Sean and Tucker say or do. They're my friends and they're my colleagues. But they are on a different side of the building, if you will, where their opinion And I'm on the news side, but we're all under the umbrella, to be clear, of Fox News Channel, and so I don't run from them or try to hide and say, oh, I'm different or whatever.
Okay, but I'm trying to understand the voice of this. So in other words, Sean Hannity's boss is also saying that the White House press credential for Jim Acosta should not be weaponized. The people
well,
that he
boss,
reports
yeah,
to
but I mean, Sean Hannity, I bet, you know, tune in tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. I bet you he may have a different opinion, certainly, than Jim Acosta, maybe even a different opinion than Fox management. I don't speak for Sean, you know. But, yeah, I mean, if you're asking, is there a news side and is there an editorial op-ed side? Yes, and I think this is the point that Fox tries to make, and I'll bring it back to what I said a moment ago, which is that we try to have a separation and say, you know, Ed Henry, Brett Baer, Chris Wallace, we're on the news side. Do I fill in on Fox and Friends and other shows that sometimes they've got more opinion? Yes, but I try to bring news to those shows, and you'll see me every weekend on Fox and Friends usually. Whereas Sean and Tucker are on the opinion side. And whereas there are other channels that I was mentioning a moment ago, and I think they're clear to you who they are, you know, who go on, like a Don Lemon, let's just be honest, and it'll say it's a news show. And the whole show is Donald Trump's the worst person in the world.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to be transparent about who we are. We're not perfect. I'm sure you could point to mistakes and say, well, on this occasion you said this or did that. But we try to have that firewall, number one. And number two, if you or others are confused, if that's what your question is, like, well, why would Fox stand up for CNN? We're not endorsing CNN. We're not endorsing Jim Acosta. We're endorsing a free and fair press. We don't think President Trump or President Bush or President, you know, Elizabeth Warren or someone down the future has the right to just arbitrarily say you can't cover the White House. And by the way, someday there will be, you know, a Democratic president
Absolutely.
Who might not like Fox
Absolutely.
News and might say, oh, well, Jim Acosta had his credentials thrown away. I don't like Ed Henry. So I'm going to take it out on Fox. And so this is not us against President Trump. It's just us standing up for free press.
That's one of the reasons I wonder why at times, and I wonder if there's any conversation there. I wonder why at times the press corps doesn't say, that's it, we're all together. And so if
You're right.
the president's
You're right.
going to treat somebody badly, or if they're going to exclude some people, and this has happened before, then none of us are going to report or show up. Is there ever any conversation along
those
lines?
There is conversation about that sometimes. But when I was saying you're right a moment ago, I was thinking, you know, what about the conversation that should be had? And I don't know, because I'm not in the White House press room every day now because of this national correspondent thing. Basically, why aren't more reporters saying, you know, what Jim is doing and some of the grandstanding we're seeing from some, that's not what we're about. And why are we all essentially going to get picked on because of, you know, somebody standing up and spouting opinions instead of reporting? I mean, I think if you look at some of the tweets of some of the White House correspondents, they tweet out opinions all the time. You know, they compare the White House to Pravda and the Soviet Union. I mean, that's not fair and honest, you know, fair and balanced reporting.
You know, actually,
that's opinion.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It really is a gray area, both the editorial and the news side of all of these networks and all of these newspapers and radio stations. But a person could make some of those critical comparisons. Or what happens, I think, sometimes, Ed, is somebody else is making it and they're reporting it. When the president holds up the front page of the New York Times and says, look at this, it's more critical, mean-spirited reporting about me, it's not the New York Times saying bad things about the president. It's their reporting what Democrats or polls or some other national figure is saying. And then that gets reflected on those organizations. But put it this way. I put this out to my listeners a week ago and have not gotten a single positive response yet. I said, give me an instance where the New York Times, Washington Post, somebody has reported inaccurately and critically something about the president. What I'm reading is their reporting of critical things about the president that are either true or are attributable to somebody else. Tell me when they just flat out lied in a critical way. I don't have a long list of examples like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example, you know, in your comparison here with the Obama administration. When I was covering Barack Obama for Fox, one time I asked him a question at a news conference. And as you say, I attribute it to Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney said this wasn't when the Iran nuclear deal happened yet. It was the preface to it. But there was some fight in the 2012 campaign about President Obama's approach to Iran. And I said, Mitt Romney says that you're giving in too much or something to that effect. And he came after me and said, I didn't know you were Mitt Romney's spokesman. You know, I'm not Mitt Romney's spokesman or Barack Obama's spokesman. I'm reading to you, the president, what the other side is saying, and I want to give you a fair, honest chance to respond. And I think if Jim Acosta and others want to do that to President Trump. It's more than healthy. And debate it out. Let the public decide. But you see a lot of times an argument, not just in the presidential news conference, but with Sarah Sanders, it becomes people, and I'm not just picking on Jim Acosta. I mean, watch the videotape of various people on a day-in, day-out basis when they have the briefing. And in fairness, they don't do it every day anymore because Sarah Sanders hasn't been doing it regularly. There's a lot of people that appear to be, at least, out to get the president and not necessarily trying to get facts.
Yeah. So what do you think's going to happen? We thought we'd have a court ruling on this today. Now they say maybe tomorrow, huh?
10 a.m. Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern is what I'm hearing.
Oh, Friday.
I guess,
yeah,
you
well,
know,
that's tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, tomorrow, you're right. Bottom line is I think CNN is hoping for a quick, and CNN and Fox and others who have supported the idea of a free press and say, hey, he should have his credentials. You know, expect that maybe the judge, appointed by President Trump, by the way, may say, you know what, this would be the fair thing to do. But I can tell you, I've talked to people around the White House who want this to go to trial. They don't want a quick ruling on Friday. They want the judge to say, hey, I'm going to...
On what grounds would they say that his... Because Sarah Sanders gave us two versions of that. One is the inappropriate handling of the intern, and then later was just his obstinate behavior. I presume that would be the grounds they would use. Yeah.
And you're right. They've shifted the argument somewhat. I think they included the obstinate behavior in the original complaint they had against Acosta. But you're right. They sort of maybe pulled back on what happened with the microphone because there was maybe a whole lot of due.
Well, let me ask you this, Ed Henry. Are you still married to a producer at CNN?
No.
Okay.
My wife works at NPR. She worked at CNN many years ago.
Oh, that's even more complicated. Your wife?
Well, yeah, she works at NPR, but that's not really, I don't know, it's not relevant to this conversation. But
no, but I just wonder what the politics and the conversations are like at home.
She doesn't work at CNN. Like I said, I used to work at CNN. My wife Shirley used to work at CNN, but neither of us work there now.
But if you worked at, if your current wife works at NPR, is she on the news side of NPR?
Yes.
I guess the conversation, while different, is similar. I just wonder what your conversations are like at home. Are you a Kellyanne Conway and her husband kind of
I don't think it's gotten to that point. No, but we go back and forth on stories and challenge each other as journalists and then focus on our marriage, not on our work. Because by the time you get home after a long day, I suppose I would assume that you're the same. You want to be with your friends and family and not just fight or talk even. I don't even want to just fight, but talk about politics because you do it all day at work.
Ed, it's Steve Bertrand in the newsroom. I want to go back to the reporters, you know, being confrontational in the briefing. And, you know, when I try to convey what's going on, certainly I'm at a great distance, but I try to be careful to convey just the extraordinary nature of what's going on and how the administration behaves, right? I mean, it's demonstrable that it's easily proven that often what Sarah Sanders says behind the podium is not true, or here we have a press secretary sharing doctored video of this event. And so I'm interested in how you draw that balance between being fair and objective, but also, you know, these are extraordinary times. I mean, she takes on people by name from the podium herself.
Yeah, she does. And then maybe that opens the door for the reporters to respond in a sharper way than they might have 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, because, you know, the White House is on the, you know, in attack mode, I suppose. I guess I would look at it as when you talk about, hey, there's specific things that Sarah Sanders didn't tell the truth on or that you could challenge on, then go to the news conference with the president and say, hey, Sarah Sanders claimed this, you claim that, and it turns out it's actually why. You know, it's neither one of the first two things, and challenge them on that. And I mean, I think that that's more than fair, and that would be helpful to the American conversation right now, because you say we live in extraordinary times. Rather than the grandstanding that sometimes goes on, rather than the, well, I believe that it wasn't an invasion of at the border. Well, let's
yeah,
stick
no,
with
I'm
facts.
With you on that. I agree with that, definitely.
You know, but the doctor's video.
Okay, but let's. But you know, we can't commute to D.C. to ask the president. So, if the thrust of your question, Steve, is what do we do with, how do we characterize, what do we say about Sarah Sanders and some of the things she's saying that are patently not true? And maybe you don't even agree with the word patently, but I mean, the video was doctored. What do we do about that, you know?
Yeah, well, I think when she has a briefing, it's more than fair. You know, sometimes people will get into side issues and whatnot. Bring it right to her on, you know, look, yesterday we were here at the briefing and you said X, and now Marco Rubio is saying that Y is happening. You know, how, you know, did you tell us the truth? Or, you know, yeah, press away. I mean, I tried to do that when I covered the White House every day. I still cover it sometimes. But again, it's become more in some, not all cases, I don't want to overgeneral, but in some cases, it's become more, it's not focused on the substance of what you say are lies or of substance of what is really the truth. It becomes more about grandstanding. And that doesn't move the conversation forward. And frankly, it's not just about moving the conversation. It doesn't call out the lies that you're saying are lies.
I think
instead,
that's
it becomes,
point.
You know, yeah. More showboating. Let's focus on, let's correct them. Let's fact check this White House. You know, more power to you. That's what journalism is supposed to be about.
Ed Henry's on the phone. We're out of time. You know, Ed, that's a good point, though, and we'll just end it there. I think the challenge for any of us, say, the talk show host you're on the air with right now, is trying to figure out, okay, even if I don't like that or disagree with that or I'll call that a lie, is that the most important part of this conversation?
On the doctored video you're talking about, some people were treating it like it was a Zapruder film in the JFK assassination. I mean, guys, let's get a handle on this. You know what I mean? I'm not saying you are. But don't you think on social media and other platforms, this became like, let's study it frame by frame like it's a JFK assassination.
Well, I'll be one of those guys. If she... in a White House,
30 seconds,
okay,
Steve.
In a White House capacity, we're supposed to depend on her for truth. If she's releasing doctored video and then not copping to that, I think that is a very big deal.
I got 15 seconds, Ed.
And it's certainly worth asking her at the next briefing, not just asking her, but pressing her, because I think as you say, it's a fair question.
Faith 42 doing okay for you?
Yeah, 42 Faith. It's a book about Jackie Robinson. It's on Amazon right now. It was on the New York Times bestseller list. And by the way, Chicago's own Jerry Reinsdorf is in there because he was at Jackie's first game. He spent a lot of time with me. So he's in 42 Faith. So I love Chicago in part because of Jerry.
I want to talk to you again. We'll talk baseball another day and maybe politics sooner
than
that.
Let's do it, pal.
Come on again.
Thanks for having me on.
You mentioned the fires in California.
Yeah.
How people are, 50-some people have passed away now?
Well, 56 that they know of.
There was a video posted by the state police or some organization out there yesterday, and it goes 4 minutes long. And it shows a woman who's trying to escape the fire. They're posting it because they want people to heed their advice. But she's taken the video from inside her car. I believe she's taken the video as she's driving through what she thinks might be her last minutes on Earth. She drives into a hellscape. It's just orange flames and fire and smoke, and she's just hyperventilating and praying and hoping that she survives as she winds her way through a road. And every now and then she goes into a tunnel. But then at the end of the tunnel, when she comes out on the other side, maybe 100 yards later, it's just orange glow. It's like you're driving into an oven. And she doesn't know what's going to be there, but she can't turn back. And she's just crying as she does it. It goes 4 minutes long. And it's the weirdest. I mean, it's just the weirdest thing you've ever seen. I'm not sure I would be taking a video if that were my circumstance, but there she was doing it. And you can see what it's like for the people out there. It's hard to imagine. I wouldn't be anywhere near that. Beth Swerk, our old producer, I talked to her today. She lives in San Francisco, some distance from there. And they're all having to drain their noses and wear masks. She says her house smells like smoke. You can see it on the horizon. She's in San Francisco. It's amazing what's going on over there. I said a moment ago that there is a car on display in Chicago, unlike any car you've ever seen before. The car is riddled with 6,000 bullets, bullet holes, and it's on display in town this weekend. Robert Torres is on a phone line, and he's the guy, I guess, that brought it here. Hey, Robert, it's John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good. How about yourself, John?
Really good. You're the founder of a nonprofit organization called Parents for Peace and Justice. Is that a Chicago organization?
That is correct. Yeah, it's a Chicago organization.
So what's this all about?
Well, you know, we had an artist that's based out of Canada, artist Victor, that actually reached out to us and said, hey, Robert, this is a car exhibition that we would love to bring out to Chicago. We know what's going on in Chicago. Is this something that you would like to partner up with us And after looking at this car, seeing the 6,000 bullets on the vehicle, it was something that motivated me to bring it and partner up with Victor in Chicago.
You know, I saw a picture of it in the newspaper, and tell me what I was seeing. Was I seeing 6,000 bullet holes? Is that what it was? The car's been shot 6,000 times, and it's a Volkswagen Beetle, right?
That is correct. So the car has been shot up over 6,000 times, from small caliber to high rifle shootings, all over from front to back. But this is exactly what we're experiencing in our city, in our community. In fact, from 2016 up to date, from about a week and a half ago, over 10,554 people have been shot in the city of Chicago. That means that there's 10,554 families that have been affected to the violence in our city in Chicago. So this is the true reality in our city. This is what our children are being faced with. These are what our families are being faced with. And so, you know, we deal with and work with mothers that have lost their children to violence. And that is often forgotten, what happens after somebody is murdered. When your child is murdered in the city of Chicago, the pain that is left behind, the trauma, you know, the counseling and support groups that we have to do, the retreats that we have to do to try to work through that pain, is something that I can't describe until you're around a mother or family that has lost a child to violence.
Is there significance to 6,000?
Excuse me?
I wonder why 6,000.
Well, I think that was just the 6,000 rounds they were able to get into the vehicle.
We surpassed that with
what we're seeing here today.
Yeah. And why is this a cause for you? Has your family been affected somehow by gunfire in Chicago?
Have not. Grew up in a community in Humboldt Park where I saw violence growing up. But what I've never done is, what I've never seen is how children, how babies are getting murdered in our city, in our community. Our children are being shot at school, shot at restaurants. You know, so in the last couple of, you know, weeks, we've seen from a month and a half ago where you saw this two-year-old child that was shot and killed.
Yeah.
From a mother that was just, you know, on Halloween, got shot and killed in front of her two children. It's just the true reality. And no, I have not been affected by gun violence. But 7 years ago, I'd seen a mother that was posting of how her child had been murdered in the city of Chicago. I was compelled to give her a call and called her. And I said, I don't know, I'm going to help. But I'm going to help, and that's where our organization was born.
Robert Torres is the founder of the nonprofit Parents for Peace and Justice. And again, this is an art installation, if you will, but a good art gets you to think and talk about something. It's called Shot Up Car, 6,000 bullet holes in it. If you want something that sort of graphically displays the torrent of bullets that we've been enduring for too long in Chicago, it's on display outside of New City Fellowship Church on the 1300 block of North Rockwell Street. Tomorrow, it's at City Hall, Millennium Park, The Bean, and Grant Park. And then on Saturday, they take it over to Wicker Park, Lincoln Park. It'll end Saturday at Wrigley Field. So I suppose it'll be over at the park at Wrigley. So good for you. I live near one of those spots. I'll make sure to check it out, Robert. Good for you. And if what's the website if folks want to find out more about your organization?
Yeah, so they can reach us at parentsforpeaceandjustice.org. Parentsforpeaceandjustice.org.
All right, thought-provoking display in town this weekend. Nice to talk to you, Robert. Keep doing what you're doing, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Robert Torres in Chicago. How about that? I saw the picture of it, and I'm sure it doesn't do justice. They took it out to a firing range and said, all right, let's fill this thing with lead. That's what we're doing to each other. And then they take the old Volkswagen Beetle around. It's at the Bean tomorrow and on the north side on Saturday. Guys are coming around on this. You're starting to love this, aren't you? 1 to 10, how much do you love that? 1 to 10, how much do you love that?
5.
9! 9!
Rhymes with 5, okay.
I don't think those rhyme.
You want to vote V? I don't want to ask you too many questions, what with your strained voice and all.
I'll go 6.
Yeah.
I like the last part the most. That's the part I really like. Otherwise,
I know the song is so long. I mean, some parts are soft. All right, let's cut to here's the part that Elif likes. This is part 3 of Bohemian Rhapsody via trombone. You're shaking your head, aren't you? You're singing the words at home. I know. I see you in your car. You're singing along. How can you not? It's on my Facebook page. I don't know if this is going to help my Facebook page or not, but if you want to see that and the people doing it and hear that and share it with your friends, I'm WGN King John on the Facebook.
I just want to add that the trombone instrument makes songs sound like Christmas songs, especially when it's strictly trombone.
It kind of does. Every now and then there have been people covering songs via trombone, and I find it lovely. By the way, there was another song that we were listening to a couple of days ago that is another cover, if you will. That was Toto's Africa. Who was it that did that? Do you remember the name?
Weezer.
Oh, no kidding. That was Weezer? Do you have that handy? Hit it.
The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me toward salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words of ancient man.
This was going to my office about 2 weeks ago, and we were digging that.
He turned to me as if to say, hurry, boy, it's waiting there for you.
So they didn't do a lot different with it, and if you listen to the whole thing, in parts it's different, but not much. I thought that was a terrific rendering of that song, too. 1 to 10, Violetta, go. How much do you like Weezer's cover of Toto's Africa? I'm giving it a 9.
Yeah, I like it.
Mm-hmm. That was a 9. Actually, that was a 6.
No, what?
Where
it's
were you
a 9
on?
Upside down.
Where were you on that? Did you like that cover by Weezer? Were you up, Ms. Garris? You're kind of the music expert on this show. Everybody is, but you cover that beat.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it. I liked this one.
Michael, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
I like and enjoy listening to you. But, they have to cut it out with that song. It's not even the best song on that Queen album.
What's the best song on Bohemian Rhapsody? Night at the Opera is the LP, right?
Yes. I've had that since I was 13 years old. And I'm 53 now.
The white album jacket with the crest on the front. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes. And also there's another album called The Night at the Opera, which is white album.
Maybe that's what
there's
I'm thinking.
A Night at the Opera and A Day at the Races.
Okay. So what's the song that, if we were going to say, hey, kids, there's this group called Queen, and forget that movie. You got to listen to this. What's the track you're going to play?
I would play the Prophet song, which I believe is the last song on the album. Or Love of My Life, or Your Best Friend,
Your Best
Seaside Rendezvous.
I'm in Love with My Car. I love that song.
Love of My Car. I think that's a Deegan song.
I'm in Love with My Car. Got a feel for my automobile. I told my girl I'd have to forget her.
I'd rather buy a new carburetor. I know the song well. But no, the Prophet song is, I think, the best song on the album.
All right. This is a good topic. I'll do it another day. Thanks for your call.
All right. Great listening to you, John.
I really appreciate your dialing in. You know, those of us who have trouble keeping up with current music appreciate people who are at least on the same page with some dated music, and suddenly it seems relevant. What do you know? Queen matters all of a sudden. John, I am so into Queen right now. I listen to Killer Queen like 15 times a day now, says 815. 847, as a former trombone player in the concert band, pep band, and marching band, I love that! 815, Bohemian Rhapsody is awesome. A solid 10-plus via the trombone. 224, I love it 100, John.
630 texted in something that I thought was just ridiculous.
Okay, go ahead.
Have Elif and Violetta ever heard the original Africa song? A, we're pushing 30. And B, we don't live under rocks.
Okay, so that's a yes. But I think that's a fair question. You're insulted by the insinuation that you don't know?
I'm not. I just thought
it was insulted
funny.
That Elif is saying I'm pushing 30.
You know how many of my friends are insulted by that?
It's, really?
We're 4 years away.
Really? I got news for you. 30 is better than 20 and 40 is better than 30.
See? That's nice.
I don't think I'm saying that just because I ain't going to be 20 again, but I'm telling you, 30 is better than 20. Don't worry about it. It's 2:55. Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis are downtown Chicago in the studio just down the hall. Hi, guys.
What's going on,
Hi,
Tom?
John. Tom? John?
Oh, boy.
Nothing gets overlooked on this show. Nothing that we can pick.
Boy. That doesn't bode well. 3 more hours and you're already off to a bad start, Ro.
I'm sorry. I'm 4 more hours.
4 more
four hours. 4 more hours. It's even worse. It's even worse. You hit on something that I think is kind of important about how, you know, things, what is old is new again.
Yeah.
And there's a whole generation of people who are like, oh, wait, what? Freddie Mercury, his story, even though I've not seen the film and it was not particularly well reviewed.
Yep. That's right. Right.
It, at least, it might spark interest in what his story was. And so when the youngsters, and I'm thinking specifically of Violetta, although Elif seems very, very in tune to things that are going on.
She does.
Yeah, she seems to have a sense of history, where Violetta will often say, 2015, I don't remember that. So that's like a different, we have two different takes
Violetta's
on humanity.
Not feeling well today, Ro. Maybe you should go a little easy on yourself.
I wonder why that is. She's not feeling well today.
I'm sick.
How late were you guys out last night?
10:30.
That's it?
Yeah, I was in bed by 10:55.
First I heard your voice today, I said, I know where you guys were last night.
Oh, my God. Oh, she was on fire last night. We'll tell the story a little bit later on.
Wait, what?
Yeah. She may not recall the whole thing. Anyway, the point is the youngins, and you're totally right about 30 being better than 20. I think 40 is a little bit better than 30, honestly.
I quite agree.
But there is... if you go and you read the stories and you learn the history of Queen and Freddie Mercury and glam rock from that era, and you see how a lot of the differences that have happened in the culture now, we think are new. They're not, you know, those are all debates that were happening back then too.
You youngsters don't know what an electric performer he was. I mean, that was just fun to see.
Yeah.
I never went to a concert, but I remember the music. And, you know, we appreciated him in his time.
Yeah.
And it's just nice that it's back. So
exactly.
I'm going to go ahead and crank the trombones in my office.
There you go. I do love the trombone version of it, though. It's
Thank
very
you.
Very marching bandish.
That was awesome.
Have a good one, John.